This is Solo Travel Talk, the Japan series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Clements.
Japan may seem so different to Westerners, and there are a lot of tropes and maybe even stereotypes about Japanese culture and the potential to clumsily cause offense. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, is astute at acclimating herself to a culture before she travels. And her recent trip to Japan was no different. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. What should you do? What is taboo? Astrid shares all as we explore cultural do's and don'ts, Japan.
Catherine, I'm very excited to do this show. And like all of our other shows that we're doing on a Japan series, in the middle of the show, I will give you a how-to tip. Something that you can really use. Everything that I'm going to talk about today, I think, is very noteworthy. But this specifically is a how-to tip that focuses on where you can get really good information dealing with different cultures, etc.
And we know that our listeners love the how-tos. A lot of them, that's why they listen to you, is for the how-tos.
Well, that's one of my specialties.
Now we're getting to the origin story of Astrid Solo Travel Talk. Okay, so let's get this out of the way. I'm wondering if this is kind of the basis for this whole episode. Is it more important to know cultural do's and don'ts for Japan than other destinations, maybe even especially for Western travelers?
Well, Catherine, I really wouldn't say it's more important because being familiar with the cultural norms and the etiquette of a foreign place that you're traveling to really does help you experience your solo trip in a much more, I would say, deep and meaningful way. It helps you, first of all, get through what I have made reference to, and I've actually done a whole podcast on what's called culture shock. Mm. And culture shock is something that you experience when really you go anywhere different. I'm from Louisiana, and when I go to Houston or Las Vegas or LA or anywhere different, the culture there is different from what I'm used to in Louisiana. So it doesn't even matter within your own country. And in the state of Louisiana, we have several micro cultures. We have New Orleans, which is very southern and sophisticated with a European kind of flair and twist to it. We've got the Cajun country in Lafayette that is very ethnic. We've got Baton Rouge is kind of like a big sports town, and it's a family-oriented place. And we have our own essence, and it's very different from Lafayette and very different from New Orleans. And then northern Louisiana is also different. But you get my gist. Cultures are different wherever you go. And there's a shock factor that comes into there, and you have to kind of adjust to it. The more you know about a place, it's easier to adjust to it, and you absorb more. Mm. And it gets you through the things that maybe you don't think or you don't take to or whatever. I always like in China. China is a fascinating place to visit. They have some beautiful things to see. Some of the food is wonderful. I mean, to go there is really to go to somewhere totally different than the United States. And there are many things about their culture that could be very off-putting if you didn't understand it. So this is what I'm saying is with culture shock. You need to kind of be prepared for the differences so you can get through it. And then those things that maybe you don't totally like or that is offending you, et cetera, it doesn't matter after a while. So by knowing it, like I said, you get through it a lot quicker. Okay. Then it also, by knowing, the cultural norms of anywhere you go, it keeps you, obviously, from unintentionally offending people. And there's a lot of things you can do with your hands, even with your feet. Or if you don't do something, I mean, you don't think it's offensive at all, but somebody might really get angry, and you don't want to do that. I mean, that's unnecessary. When you start that kind of dynamic, it's, you know, you feel uncomfortable. So that's important. Also, by knowing these cultural norms, there's some things that even go towards the legal aspect. You know, it keeps you from breaking the law or just breaking the rules. And that's important to know. I mean, when you go to Singapore, it's against the law to chew gum. It's actually against the law to have gum in your purse. I don't think as many people chew gum anymore, but there are still people who do. And if you know this prior to you go, you just won't have any gum in your purse or you won't chew it. Then for women solo travelers, it does protect you from potential harassment and maybe even something that is a violent occurrence. So it's important to know these things, I feel like, so you just don't accidentally do something that, you know, would cause you harm.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, the safety aspect. It's sort of the extreme. Yeah,
it is, but it is some of it. Yeah. Like, you know, in the Middle East and in different areas of the world, they have totally different types of beliefs in certain things. And so it's better to just be prepared and to know. Then on the positive side, it opens doors to new friendships. This really is so true because you'll connect more with others. There's just a much better rapport when you respect each other and you kind of blend in how you are responding, etc. And all of that makes your trip so much better. I'll just kind of sum some of this up. As most places that you travel to, like I said, have something or many things that are different from your native culture. A couple other examples, so I want to drive this point in. If you go to France and say you have dinner, you're at a dinner party or you're with some people that you don't really know, they're French, etc., it is a big no-no to talk about anything with money in terms of how much money you make or what your financial status is or anything. They're not interested in that. When you're in France and you eat dinner, they are interested in really, for the most part, substantive or maybe to somewhat high-minded conversation, as well as really savoring and enjoying the meal and the time together. That is not a time to mention anything with money, okay? But in Japan, they will ask you, first off, how much money do you make? How big is your house? All kinds of stuff. And let me tell you, if you don't respond and respond honestly, they consider it to be rude. So it's a totally different mindset than in Japan. Direct eye contact, is very offensive to them. But in Western countries, if you don't have direct eye contact, people start to think, well, there's something shifty or there's a trust factor that comes up. And when I was first in Japan, I kept noticing them looking at, like, my mouth or my chest or my throat. I was thinking, why aren't you looking at me? And I had forgot at first about this particular cultural thing that is just part of being well-mannered. Mm. And then also, Japan, slurp away when you are having ramen noodles or udon or whatever. But like in England, oh my God, never slurp. So, you know, that just kind of gives you a picture of how things are really different in so many places that you wouldn't even dream that they were a problem, or you would think they were horrible and you really should be doing it. Bottom line answer to the question is, really, Catherine, it's not more important to know the cultural do's and don'ts of Japan than any other foreign country you're traveling to. And my philosophy is really know before you go. Mm-hmm. You know, the cultural norms of wherever you're going, it really does behoove you to spend an hour or two on the internet and really get familiar with it. So, you know, your trip will be easier, more enriching, and you'll just understand where you are more.
So we already applaud the listeners who are, they are going to Japan and they are listening to this very podcast to get acclimated.
Good, good, good. Because there are a lot of things. There's a lot of things to know.
Speaking of which, why don't we dive into it? How about we tackle pitfalls first? What are some of the cultural don'ts, Astrid? And maybe we can get you to kind of share with us if you fell into any of these foibles.
Well, I kind of already told you. At first, I didn't know about this eye contact. I forgot about that. Now, listeners, if you want to write some of this down, get paper and pen, because I do have a lot of do's and don'ts, and there are a lot of don'ts. So, you want to try to blend in, because you're not going to blend in unless you're Japanese in your appearance. So you're going to want to try to know what to do and what not to do. Okay, I'm going to break it up, and I'm going to start with food and eating don'ts, because eating is so part of Japanese life. When you eat in Japan during your meals, it's a time for rest, reflection, rejuvenation, and if you're eating with others, a communal type of experience. So there are a lot of different things that involve food and eating that could be offensive. So I'm going to go through some of the most important ones. Number one, don't commit chopstick faux pas. Let me tell you, if you've traveled to Japan, unless you eat at very fine restaurants, there will be no knife, fork, or spoon. So you will have to eat with chopsticks. So if this bothers you, you can bring your own. If you're at, a fine restaurant, they will get it for you. But everybody's going to look at you and say, boy, why'd they come to Japan? So you will be eating with chopsticks every meal. So it behooves you to kind of know what you shouldn't do. Because, if you're from the West, you might accidentally do something. Like one of the things is do not cross the chopsticks. That's like bad, like almost like, you're giving yourself bad luck. What you need to do is when you're not using the chopsticks to put food in your mouth is you need to lay them at the top of your plate on the chopstick rest pointing left. Lay them together. If you don't have a chopstick rest, you need to put them in, say the chopsticks are wooden and they come in a little paper sleeve. You put them in the paper sleeve and you put them on top of the plate, pointing to the left. The next thing is don't stick your chopsticks upright. This is one of the worst things in a bowl of rice. And you're going to get rice with every meal. So don't just cavalier say, well, these things are falling down or, and you just stick them in. That is like super bad luck. It makes references to death. And the Japanese will look at you like, they will really cast a side eye that you're going, well, who cares? I didn't want it to fall or whatever, but don't do that. Then don't stab your food with the chopstick to get it in your mouth. Chopsticks are not easy to eat with if you don't have good fine motor skills and you're not used to doing it. I don't. I was in Japan for 3.5 weeks and it was like I was trying to do it with my left hand and I'm right-handed. It's difficult. I would be eating a couple of morsels of rice while the other people were just, cavalierly shoveling it in. And I was going, oh, that's so cool.
You're hoping it'll stick to the chopstick to get it in your mouth.
I was saying, oh, yeah. And then it fall. And, I know they were looking at me, but you're going to be eating with chopsticks. So don't stab your food to get it on the chopstick to get it in your mouth. Then don't point with a chopstick. Say you want to get the server or whatever, and don't accidentally say, hey, would you? No, point with chopsticks. I know this sounds funny or goofy, but you might accidentally do that just because you don't know it. That's like real offensive. And then the last is don't lick the chopsticks. Just know there are certain things with chopsticks that you don't do. The main thing is just use them to get as much food artfully in your mouth as possible. And know that it's probably going to take you longer to eat your meal in Japan because of the chopsticks. And they don't rush when they eat anyway. So that was number one. Number two, don't burp. In some cultures, burping is not that bad. You know, it's kind of like they sure did like their meal. Well, in Japan, they are highly offended by any bodily gas passing. And even like you'll find when you go into a bathroom to use the bathroom, they have these fabulous toilets. And they have all these buttons you push to do different things. One of the buttons on many of the toilets is an artificial flushing sound, which they use this if they have a stomach that, you know, they need to, there's some
sounds they would like to cover.
Yeah, yeah. Or some of them even have music. So, oh, look, they're really, there's something else when it comes to.
We might do an episode just on the toilet.
We should, because let me tell you something. They're out of this world. And really, there's so many different kind of etiquettes when it comes to going to the bathroom all over the world. I mean, I know that sounds really weird, but it is, it's true. No burping and nothing loud coming, you know, from the body. But there's going to be one thing later on we'll talk about that is okay. Number three, don't walk around and eat. So there's no eating on the run in Japan. Like I said, food is to be savored. And, you know, you don't see people walking around with food eating. You might see somebody from a street vendor getting something, but they typically stand there and eat what they have. So don't do that. Number four is don't pour your soy sauce directly on food. Now, a lot of Americans who like Asian food, it's all put on one plate or whatever. And so they pour it on there. Oh, in Japan, that is a big no-no because you have usually all these smaller plates because in Japan, they don't believe in putting several different types of food on one plate, mixing the flavors like that. They have all these little different small plates, and you eat from that each plate. So the same thing with the soy sauce. You put the soy sauce in a little bowl. It's usually a little kind of square bowl, and you dip your sushi or whatever in the soy sauce. Don't go and pour. They'll go, oh, God, they're ruining the meal. The chef might come over and basically kind of, he wouldn't embarrass you, but he would be kind of unnerved a little bit. So pour your soy sauce, just the amount that you want, in one of those little dishes. Okay. Number five, don't ask for a doggy bag or to go, because there's no such thing in Japan as that. So they'll look at you like, what are you talking about? I mean, so don't even think that you can, you know, you can't eat all this food or whatever and you want to bring it back with you. They don't have anything like doggy bags. Okay, number three, don't eat everything on your plate or drink everything in your glass. It's a very weird thing. The Japanese feel like if you do this, like you're still kind of hungry, that they didn't really satisfy you, as well as they kind of think, well, gluttony, little, that person is greedy, you know, or whatever, if they eat and drink everything. So it's just kind of like a leave just a little on your plate and just a little in your glass. There are other countries and cultures that do that. And Japan is very much like that because that shows that you've been totally satisfied to the point you can't even eat everything on your plate. Then number seven is don't drink too much sake. Let me tell you something. Sake is going to be around you all the time when you're eating in Japan. And you may like it. Some people don't like it. It goes down smooth, but boy, it has got a strong punch. And, you know, you can be drunk all of a sudden. I mean, I'm serious. And drunkenness is never good when you're traveling solo or even with people in a foreign country, but especially with Japan, in Japan. If you can't hold your sake, I mean, you are, I hate to say this, a wuss. I mean, this is like, a little bit later on, I'm going to talk about sake and a little bit about sake etiquette, but I wanted just to make this a don't, because people, they say, oh, well, I'll have a couple of glasses of sake. It's so little. And, you know, I love to enjoy wine with my dentist. Whoa. I mean, you'll be like completely gone. So I just want to warn you, take it very slow with sake. So, okay. Then number eight, don't tip. Now, you know, I know you're saying, what? You know, I didn't hear you. What'd you say? Don't tip? And it's yes, do not tip, because gratuities in Japan are not appreciated. They're considered to be rude and actually demeaning to someone to give them a tip, because they feel like good service is part of the meal and you don't need to give the server a thank you or whatever. They're well paid, and it's part of the presentation of the food, because in Japan, it's not only the taste that you savor and you enjoy, but the Japanese chefs really get into making the food beautiful on the plate and the presentation, and the servers are very well trained to serve you in a certain way and a certain rhythm of the meal and everything. That's just part of what they get paid to do. It's not like they have to earn a portion of what their salary would be. So do not tip. All right, now we're going to move into the manners and personal behavior category. These don'ts. Okay, number nine is don't bother the geishas or the maikos for photo ops. Now, if you go to Kyoto, where most of the geisha and maiko live and perform, and, you know, this is, they have a whole district in called Gion or Gion, where a lot of the geisha and maikos live, and they perform ceremonies, tea ceremonies in the tea houses, or they do performances in the theater or whatever. And it's very hard to see them, because they don't, you know, they don't avail themselves. So if you happen to see one walking very fast, because the ones that I've seen, they walk very fast and they dash in and out of somewhere, because they really don't interact with others unless they have a specific thing that they're doing, okay? So don't go up to them and ask them to take a picture with you or whatever, because they'll be very off-putting to you. Now, with that said, if you see a lady or a young woman who's dressed like a geiko or a maiko, and they're just strolling down the street, that's a fake geisha. They're happy to take a photo with you, and usually for a small price. So, you know, just know that don't disturb the real geishas in the maiko. But there are the fake geishas that are in Kyoto and strolling, and they're also very pretty, and they're okay to bother. But, you know, this is something I thought that I should mention, because if you don't know, you would think, oh, well, you know, I've heard they're like movie stars or whatever. I want to get something for my Instagram or whatever. No, I mean, that could easily, I could do something like that, you know. But just know they're fake geishas. So don't worry. If you want some kind of geisha photo, you can find somebody that'll do it with you. Okay, the next one, the loud bodily noises. Don't blow your nose in public. Ooh. They don't like that at all. It's okay to sniffle. And I mean, I heard a lot of people going, I did. And I thought that was so odd. But they sniffle. There's no blowing noses or anything. And if you have to do it, go into a bathroom or go somewhere where you're totally private, because they'll be looking at you like with the eyes wide open, total fright, and they'll leave. They'll try to get away from you. Because, too, not only the sound, and they're very quiet culture, they're very clean, and they think that's spreading germs. I mean, when you go to Japan, lots of people wear the mask, and they wear the mask to protect themselves from pollution and also from, germs, and then spreading their own germs to other people. So they're big on that. So don't blow your nose in front of others. Number 11, I kind of touched on this. Don't stare. If you meet somebody and start talking to them, break your eye contact off and on with them. Like I said, the Japanese don't look you straight in the eye, so don't feel like that they don't want to talk to you, because they kind of, look at your neck or maybe even lower than that, because they think if you look at them in the eye and keep looking at them in their eyes, they think you're creepy, or maybe you're coming on or something like that. They don't like anything like that, so they are proactive and they don't let it happen. So you do the same, and it will make them much more relaxed around you. Number 12 is don't touch anyone. The Japanese are not a huggy-kissy culture. No public displays of affection. They, as most people know, bow. When they greet somebody or meet somebody, they bow. They never kiss on both cheeks or three times, four times, or anything like that, and really not even a handshake. If they extend their hand, then it's okay, but it's really the bow. And I'm going to be talking about bow etiquette later on in the show. Okay, then number 13, if you smoke, don't smoke walking down the street, just like eating. Mm-hmm. Don't smoke or eat walking down the street. And surprisingly, in Japan, they have quite a number of places where people can smoke, and it's usually well documented with a sign or whatever. And even in some restaurants, more ethnic or even upscale, and bars, they will have certain rooms where you can smoke. Hmm. So if you are a smoker, just know, look for those designated areas or ask somebody, can you smoke in this restaurant? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, number 14, don't jaywalk. Just like Singapore, it's against the law. And the Japanese follow the rules. These people don't walk across the street when the little light doesn't say you're supposed to walk across the street. So you go to the designated pedestrian crossings, you wait for the light, and then you go with the flow when it says to go. Because if you don't, you're really breaking the law, and you never know when somebody's going to come tap you on the shoulder and say, look, and then you've wasted some money just because you didn't see any cars, so you just thought, well, I'll just walk in the middle of the street. And let me tell you, I could be guilty of that sometimes. I'm thinking, I know I need to go over there, and there's nobody coming. I'm always reprimanding myself when I accidentally or I just do it, because I'm thinking, you're going to get clipped doing this one day, Astrid. You shouldn't do that. So I keep making myself do it. In Japan, I followed it religiously because I knew that they're big on that. So don't break the rules in Japan, especially don't jaywalk. Also, don't litter. Like I said, I kind of mentioned Japan, they're clean freaks. They're very clean. They don't believe in defacing anything. You will see very little graffiti. Now, some people think graffiti is art. Some people think it's defacing things. Well, I'm not going to make any judgment on that. But the bottom line is in Japan, you see very little of it. And they don't believe in anything defacing anything or littering. And what's so odd about the no littering, it's not that it's just not a cultural thing. It's a cultural thing, no littering. But they don't even have any garbage cans around. So it's so unbelievable that to see a whole massive people, this modern culture with everybody working and stressed and everything, the people don't just throw things down or just say, you know, they just don't, you don't see any papers or anything anywhere. They do not litter. I would say I'm sure it's probably against the law. I can't definitively say that, but it's definitely a cultural no, 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 no.
Well, didn't you tell us that people carry a little bag to carry their refuse in with them?
Yes, yes. That's very typical because, and I'll talk about this a little bit on the dues, is to get that. And you'll find the trash cans, because there are very few of them, at the convenience stores and at the usually the public toilets, those two areas. The rest of the, you know, you don't see them at all. Which I find amazing that there's no trash everywhere. No, but they don't do it. Okay. The next one is something you would never think about is don't open the taxi cab. If you hail a cab and it stops, don't open the doors. Most taxi cab doors open automatically. But if they don't, that's part of the driver's duty is to get out and open the door for you. And when he takes you to your destination, wait for him to get out and open the door for you if the doors don't open automatically. Now, you think, oh, that's no big deal. But it is in a way that you really should do as the Japanese do when in Japan. And that's an easy thing not to know what to do is just say, here's my credit card, take it, and then open the door and jump out. No, just wait, and he's going to very nicely get out and open your door. So, okay. And also, you know, watch out. The door will open you. You think it'll knock you down. Okay. Then number 17 is don't open gifts in front of the giver unless the giver wants you to. The etiquette is you take the gift with both hands and you put it somewhere, and when you get home or wherever, your hotel room or whatever, then you open the gift. And, you know, of course, write a thank you note or some kind of way correspond with a thank you of some sort. Then number 18, now this is kind of, it's a little bit in just one particular situation. It's not overall. But in the ancient city of Nara, this is kind of where Imperial Japan started. There's a gorgeous old temple there that is the largest wood temple in the world. It is just humongous, and it has this humongous statue of Buddha, and lots of people go here. And in front of it, there is a deer park, where there are deers roaming free all over, and they're not afraid of people. And the don't is don't taunt them. Don't pull their tails. Don't have food, because they sell these little food crackers for them. Don't taunt them and kind of say, give it to them, but then not give it, because they are mean. They'll kick you. They'll fight you. And deer in Japan are really considered sacred. Be very respectful to these deer. Now, you might think, ooh, they look kind of scruffy to me. But I'm just saying, if you go to Nara, be respectful for these deer.
This was a cultural don't I was not expecting.
No. Most people don't. And most people think it's so odd that all these deer are so comfortable around people because, you know, deer, you think they're here 1 second and split second, they're gone. No, not these deer. And don't harass them or anything like that. Because if you do, you're liable to have a big bruise on your arm. And they kick you, too. So just be mindful of that. Okay, number 19. And this is one I have to always, you know, be careful of because I have a big mouth. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I thought I wanted to be an opera singer when I was real young and studied voice. But don't speak loudly or shout. They're basically a very quiet society, and any loud speaking and shouting makes them very uncomfortable. And they'll probably walk away. I mean, they'll think maybe you're so agitated or you're not quite together or whatever. They don't like anything loud. Then number two is don't take photos inside of temples or of people without asking their permission first. Now, lots of people who take a lot of photos know that you should ask somebody if you're taking their photo, or, you know, just say, do you mind if I, you know. But the temples, they don't really know. But that's a big no-no, because this is a spiritual place and you're not supposed to be taking something like that in a place that is highly sacred. So you asked me to confess on what I broke, or did I have a hard time? The first day that I got there, the first temple I went to, it was so beautiful when I got in there. I just started taking pictures. I completely forgot about it. Somebody came up to me and said, no. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that. But it's kind of like a bad luck thing for you, too, they believe. But I did break that rule start off. But from then on, I didn't. And that goes for at the shrines also. So, and of course, you know, ask people as much as possible. A lot of people, they know that's going to go on, especially when there's so many people in a certain place that you're visiting. But if you can, they always appreciate it. And a lot of times they'll say no. That's my long answer to the don'ts.
I like it. I feel like you've protected us from falling into some of those cultural don'ts.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, like I said, you'd never think about, and you think they're no big deal, but they are a big deal to the Japanese.
Why don't we take a quick sponsor break here? We have a little promotion here for you, brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club. Astrid, we know our listeners love how-tos, and you teased right at the start that we were going to have this right in the middle here. So what is your number one resource for learning cultural do's and don'ts for any destination?
Well, it's not that complicated. My first source is Google. I mean, Google really has changed everybody's life. You don't go to the library really anymore. You don't even go to the bookstores anymore. You can get on the internet and start Googling whatever topic you can make up. So I really do. I start with Google, and I'll put in cultural do's and don'ts of Japan or Singapore or Hanoi or, you know, Vietnam and everything. And you will have an abundance of articles, blogs, then also all kinds of different exposés on that topic. Then I also do that with the YouTube. I will put in Google or, you know, on my search bar, YouTube and cultural do's and don'ts of Japan, or Japan cultural do's and don'ts. There'll be all kinds of videos. Some of them will be very informative. Some of them will be done by vloggers or people who just making videos that want to talk about culture, etc. But you get a lot from those YouTube videos. And so don't forget to do that. And then, of course, podcasts like Solo Travel Talk. But that's where I start. And there is one site. There are a couple of other things that I want to highlight. There's a site called Culture Smart. And it gives a lot of great etiquette tips for a lot of different countries and cultures, their beliefs and attitudes of the people and their values. They go into a lot more depth than you would get from, you know, just a basic article. How to avoid certain problems, or what basically not to do. And then also understanding the culture in a historical context. And a lot of times when you do understand a culture or things that are different from a historical perspective, it comes alive. You accept it. It's not nearly as off-putting as it would be if you didn't understand why it's the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay, then also they usually talk about how a particular country views Americans. So that can be very insightful to you. They think Americans are loud, rude, rich, dress terribly, and all this kind of stuff. At least you know what they think about you before you go there. And you might want to present yourself differently or change some things about how you would normally behave that would get a different response from them. I'll never forget, I had a guide in Beijing, and after the second day, she told me, "You just don't seem like an American." Might help you a little bit in making your trip better. Then also, in this culture smart, they give you the laws and the taboos. So those are very important to know. Another source of good information are called the Blue Guides. And these are guides on each country. And you can get them in print or digital. You can order them off of the internet. But they're really good on culture. I think they're even used in like business etiquette.
Protocol kind of things.
Yeah. They might even have been developed, these Blue Guides, because of that. And then some of your guidebooks, Lonely Planet and Fromner's, they're all good. They give, you know, some pretty good cultural insight, but they don't go into everything like those two that I just mentioned to you. And go to Google and just start reading and bookmarking things that you like and you know, spend at least a couple of hours doing it because it really will change the whole dynamic of your trip.
You know, one thing that, Astrid, you and I think we've talked about before, but just reflecting on some of the things you just were talking about, I just recently heard somebody say, you can't understand one culture without understanding two cultures, because there is like a compare and contrast. It's really sort of interesting. Like, I'm guessing you have a different perspective on your American culture because of all this travel you've been doing and because you've done all this research into other cultures.
Yeah, and what it's kind of made me do is I tried to be a cosmopolitan traveler that is not haughty or uppity. I like to be somebody that's relaxed, but I'm learned and I'm experienced. I have confidence. And so I think that helps me not just be branded as an American, even though there's an Americanness about me, but I don't fall totally into that.
Yeah.
Even in the way I dress, you know, I try to be very respectful of the culture and how they're dressing. I won't go totally, but I'll try to blend in very much. So there's nothing there that stamps me as, oh, she buys everything from whatever, you know, a brand or, you know, like, I don't want to name any brands because somebody might feel like that I'm being negative. But, I try to tone all that down.
Well, you always seem to take that idea of, like, blend in so that you can absorb. Blend in so you can absorb.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. And yes. Actually, you know, one of the things you talk about is in the Astrid Travel Club is that idea of, like, did you see anything in a culture that you want to adopt or you want to bring home with you? So you are sort of sensitive to those things. And that's actually, in my opinion, that's like an American culture, is like we take all the good from the cultures that come to the United States and we get to sort of make them American.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that makes you appreciate America, too, so much more, that we have all of these different experiences and mindsets that we can tap into. I mean, you know, I talked about the chopsticks. I kept thinking, you know, the Japanese are so healthy and none of them are overweight and they take care of themselves. And I kept thinking, you know, maybe it's all because they eat with chopsticks and they have to eat so slow. And the food is, you know, properly digested. Mm-hmm. And there's something about just their whole consciousness. But these chopsticks keep them from, like, eating in 5 minutes and then doing something else. You see what I'm saying? And I was trying to think, well, how could I start eating with chopsticks? Now, I know that's going overboard.
Well, you know what? We have a mutual friend who I wonder could train you up here.
Look, I need a lot of training because I am, I'm so bad with them. But I know that sounds weird and kind of laughable, but I bet you if I would change the way that I eat, it would be a very positive thing because I'm one, I love good food and I'll enjoy a meal going out. But typically, I don't eat that much. And when I eat, it's like, eat, over, next thing.
Well, this wonderful how-to on cultural do's and don'ts has been brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club. And we're going to have a whole episode dedicated to the Astrid Travel Club. Astrid, the doors are open now. So listeners can go to astridtravel.com, find out more about the Astrid Travel Club. It's going to be a very special offering. You already have people signing up. It's been really neat to see.
We have a tab in the header on the website that is Astrid Travel Club. So all you do is have to click on that and you'll see a drop down all about the club, how you can join, and then the two upcoming trips, and then two tours that I had done, not for the club, but kind of part of how this whole thing evolved, just to kind of reiterate my thinking on what I offer that I consider to be very special and different.
So if you are of the Astrid Travel philosophy and you want to meet other like-minded people, just go to astridtravel.com. There's a tab there for you for the Astrid Travel Club, and click on it and see if it's the right fit for you. Great mid-show how-to, Astrid, bet. Now, we delved into all the don'ts, but so now that leaves perfect opening for us to do all the cultural do's. Tell us some of the cultural do's of Japan so we can deftly navigate our trip.
Okay, well, back to the food.
We liked coming back to the food.
And eating, because that's very important with them. And I mentioned this before. So I'll start with the number one, which is so hard for me to comprehend because the Japanese are quiet. And they don't like anything that's loud. You will never hear blaring music or anything like that, okay? But do slurp your noodles. And if you go into a ramen shop or any restaurant and you're eating a udon or some type of noodle and you're slurping, and there are other people slurping, that is compliments to the chef. And it shows that you are having great pleasure in eating this particular dish. So think about it. I mean, I know it sounds so stupid and that you would never do it, but that is what they love and they do it. So
slurp away.
Yeah, slurp away. But don't slurp your drinks and don't slurp like, you know, through your straw. It's just these certain noodle dishes and udon and all that. It's not slurp everything. No. Then the next one is do pour others' drinks, but not your own. Basically, the Japanese, this is part of their culture. They don't pour their own liquor or drinks or even water themselves. Mm. They either have the server or somebody else eating at the table that they're with. It is the proper etiquette that that person pours your water or your drinks, et cetera, and you do the same thing. It's part of this communal kind of consciousness that is definitely in the Japanese culture. And before you start drinking, say you're with three other people and you're getting ready to have a glass of wine or some sake, nobody starts drinking until they come pay. They wait and then they come pay or, you know, whatever. But that's basically saying cheers. And then once you do that, then, you know, everybody can drink as they want to. But just remember, don't pour your own wine or let somebody else do it. And they'll do it because they're all, that's what they learned as a child. Number three, now this is very different, and you would not know to do this as a Westerner. This is do compliment the chef or the server before and after eating your meal. Now, I didn't even realize this, and I had done research before I left, that this is such a big deal. But when I went on a food tour, the guide stressed this. What you do is before, once you're served and before you start eating, you put your hands in your lap and you say, itadakima. And believe me, you won't remember it. But that's how that's what you're supposed to say. And that's basically, I will receive. But if you can't remember that, just say, compliment the chef or the server and say, oh, this is a beautiful meal. I'm so excited to be able to enjoy it. It is some kind of reference before you take your first bite. Then after you finish and you're ready to go and you've paid the bill, you say, oh, this is real hard, and you probably won't remember it. But the main thing is know that it's done, and it's done all the time. Gochi so sama disitu. I think that's it. But it's basically, it was a feast. Or thank you. It was delicious. Just something that you do formally recognize that you are, it was wonderful. And that's like saying hello and goodbye. You know, you wouldn't just leave somebody and not tell them goodbye. Same kind of thing. So just know you need to make reference to it, even if you can't say those words that I can't and I have them written down in front of me. You'll never remember them unless you really have a great memory. Okay, then number four, do lift bowls of rice, noodles, or small plates to eat. Now, this is how you do it. You take the bowl of rice or a small plate in your left hand. Then in your right hand, you have the chopsticks. And you eat, and you put the bowl up close to your mouth, and you take the chopsticks, and that's how you do it. You don't leave the rice down there, and you're trying to get the chopsticks, and with enough rice or whatever, and it's all falling off and everything. If you put it close, it's not nearly as bad. And for some reason, it does work better. So know that that's how you do it with the small plates. Now, if you have soup, it's okay to drink the liquid from the soup, but you have to hold the soup bowl with both hands, not just with the left hand or the right hand, and then put the bowl to your mouth and drink it. So just like you would say drink tea or whatever with both hands. So that's important. And then don't lift a large plate. If you have a large plate of something, don't lift that thing up and try to eat it. That's a no-no. So that's number four. Do lift bowls of rice, noodles, or small plates to eat. Then number five is do eat sushi with chopsticks or with your hands. And that is okay in Japan. Now, you will see when you go to Japan, every meal, whether it's a very inexpensive restaurant or the most expensive in Japan, you're going to be given something to wipe your hands, whether it's some type of little towelette or even like a heated washcloth. They do not start or touch their chopsticks or start anything in the meal until they have cleaned their hands. And they know you probably didn't go to the bathroom and wash your hands before you started eating. But they're very clean in Japan. So it's okay to use your hands when you're eating sushi. And don't feel like that's something that is crude.
Yeah.
Okay. Then number six, do practice proper etiquette when drinking sake. Okay, here is the sake deal. First of all, Sake, like I said, has been a fundamental part of Japanese culture for over 2,000 years. So, I mean, they really, really, everybody drinks sake that is Japanese. It's just so part of their whole, the way that they eat and celebrate. I mean, it's at all ceremonies, all family celebrations, and really pretty much in their daily life, too. There are codes of practice when serving and drinking sake. First is when you want to drink sake and it's poured in the cup for you, you take it and you put it in one hand, say your left hand, and then the other hand, the right hand, you put at the bottom of the cup. So you drink it like that. Okay. You don't just drink it with one hand, blah, 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 or two hands together. It's one on the side and one on the bottom, and you respectfully put it to your mouth, and you should just taste a little of it. Don't swig it.
So for listeners, I'm going to describe what you just did. So you had like one hand was like you're doing, forgive me, all our college listeners will appreciate this, are like drinking a shot. And then the other hand is sort of like supporting the bottom, like it's almost like you're sticking out your index finger and tipping it back.
Yes, yes. And that's the way, the proper way to drink it. Then, like I said before, pour everyone or whoever is doing the pouring will pour everyone's sake glass before you start drinking. And if you are doing the pouring, pour the eldest person in the group first or the most respected or whatever. That's typical. Then, before you all start drinking, you say, "Kanpai," and then drink away. Also know that sake can be consumed heated or hot, room temperature or cold. And it's really a personal preference now. Before, they had a lot more rules, but there's over 10,000 different types of sake. And so it doesn't really, you know, that's all changed. So that's the sake story. And like I said, just be careful with sake because it is fire water.
It'll sneak up on you.
Okay. Number 7 is low table sitting etiquette. And there's a certain word for this type of interiors, and it slips my mind right now, but they have the low tables and the low seats. Some of them don't even have seats, but pretty much now you have seats. But when you're sitting at one of those tables to eat, if you're a man, you cross your legs. But if you're a woman, you put both of your legs to one side. And if you're taking part in a tea ceremony, if you can, you sit like on your feet, like with your knees, you kneel down and you sit. Oh, and that's excruciating. If you don't take regular yoga or anything where you practice in that, and if you have any age on you, oh, that is painful. So if you can't do that at a tea ceremony and you're a lady, then just sit with your legs to the side on the floor if they don't have one of those chairs, if they really expect you to really be traditional. And that's okay. Then 8, this is about the food, but do try all types of Japanese food and cuisine because the food there is fabulous. The food will be a key part of your trip because I would venture to say when you go to Japan, you'll never have a bad meal. It's kind of like Louisiana in Japan. They're so into fresh, tasty, healthy, nutritious, good food that people who don't make that kind of food don't stay in business. Yeah. Good ramen noodles are not expensive. And they have great ramen stuff there. They have a whole street in Tokyo called Ramen Street. It's nothing but filled with a ramen restaurant. So if you like that, ramen boy, Tokyo is, but they have them all over. But the bottom line is, try everything because this is very important to experiencing their culture in a deep way. And it's part of what you come back home with when you eat slower and you've gone into their gardens and experienced the nature and you watch how they live their lives very focused, very quality-oriented, excellent-oriented, super successful economy. But the people don't seem to be stressed out. They're busy and they're focused, but they have a way of controlling the stress factor and this eating and what they're eating. It all goes into that. And it'll come to you. You'll get it, you know, by being there for any period of time. So do try to all the different foods because it's all part of the Japan cultural experience. Okay, now going into the do's of manners and personal behavior. Number one or nine is do bow. Now, this is so odd for people in Western culture is to bow. And they bow all the time, whether it's meeting people, thanking someone, or even apologizing. And the general rule is if people that you come in contact bow, you bow. You know, you follow their lead. And don't come up from the bow until they come up. And how you bow specifically is you clasp your hands and you put them in your, kind of at your waist or your lap. And you bend from the hips with a straight back. It's not a little head nod or with your head going down. It's a straight back and bending at the hips. And there's actually three levels of bowing in Japan. Like the first one is basically for strangers and just acknowledging or whatever. The second one is much more respectful. The third one is like meeting somebody very important or you really, really apologizing or something of that nature. But you will bow 20 times in a day. There's a lot of people, they just bow there. And that's really kind of hard to get used to, I thought, because I wanted to just kind of nod my head. So, no, don't do that, because that's really kind of being, cause it's kind of like, I'm just doing this because, you know what I'm saying? I mean, do it if you do it right.
Okay? That's what you always say. If you're going to do it.
Yeah, you got to do it right. Okay, number two. Learn just a few basic Japanese words. You know, and Japanese is so difficult. I mean, it is. People who learn how to speak Japanese just completely blow me away because all those kanji symbols and when they put them together, you know, they kind of mean different things in different settings and just the sounds of it. But a couple of words you should know, like, hello is konnichiwa, and yes is hi, no is I, and you'll not hear no very much. In Japan, they hate to say no, so they'll change the subject or whatever, but no is like almost a word that is not ever used, but you can say I. Then thank you is arigato. And I said that, oh my God, I don't know how many times. Please is onegai shimatsu. And sorry is sumimasen. I never could get that one. And of course, goodbye is sayonara. And most everybody knows that. But just those few things. Arigato, I said all the time. And hi and sayonara. Onegai shimasu, the please, yes. And maybe you just have them written down just somewhere we can keep looking at them and, you know, maybe they'll start to flow more naturally. But if you just do that little thing, it is an icebreaker. Then number three is do be quiet on public transportation. I kind of touched on that. Trains, subways, buses, taxis. Put your smartphone on silence. They do not like ringing smartphones. And don't take calls on your smartphone when you're in the trains or your buses or anywhere, unless it's an emergency. And then if you have to take it, speak very softly. I mean, they speak so softly there. So but know that to do that, and of course, no loud music on tech devices, you will get reprimanded. Somebody will come up to you and yes. So don't think that you can just jam out in Japan. Okay. Then number four is do line up to enter trains, subways, buses, taxi stands, restaurants, even toilets. But Japan, you will, to line up in Japan is not a hassle. They are the greatest line makers in the whole world. There's no breaking, no pushing, no shoving. Nobody is stressed out because they have to stand in line. They just calmly stand in line. And it's just wonderful. I mean, you feel it and you do it too. And they even have, like, you know, in the transportation, the buses and the trains, et cetera, they have certain marks on the pavement where, you know, where you're supposed to line up. And everybody just does it so civilized. And the train will stop. Everybody gets out. And then the people in the lines slowly go in. And it just flows. You go to China, breaking, pushing. There is no, I mean, it is totally different. Know that that's the cultural practice in Japan and do it. And it's wonderful. All I can say is, I mean, you know, when you go to Japan, you see all this, people can act right if they just want to. And the Japanese act right. It's just the way their culture is. Okay, then number five is do think left. Japan, like England, drives, walks, stands, rides on the left. So escalator, stairs, it's all completely different than we in Western countries. You normally go up on the right. Now you go up on the left. And I mean, I know after about 10 days, I would approach somebody and go, wait a minute. You know, you get kind of weirded out a little bit with it. And when you cross the street, make sure you look left and you don't get wiped out. Mm. But in the bigger cities, you'll see a lot of arrows, you know, to help you not forget about that. But so Japan is a lefty. Do think left when you go to Japan. I've touched on this a couple of times. Do follow the rules and the laws. You know, in Japan, there are plenty of signs with the circles, with the X's, so it helps you. But the Japanese don't break the rules. I mean, it is beneath them. They feel shameful. Mm-hmm. And to do something that would bring shame upon themselves or their family, oh, that is awful. So they just don't go there. Plus, they're very mindful of each other. Like I said, they're community-oriented. You'll find if you're walking down the street and you look lost, within 5 minutes, somebody's going to come up and try to help you. Or if you don't understand something, it's amazing. Somebody told me when I was there, they said, well, because they have so many people and they have to live in close proximity to each other, they know that they need to all work together in order for it to stay nice and have a quality of life. If you don't do that, then it all becomes like a jungle or whatever. And so that's how they live. And it is so inspiring. I mean, I was totally inspired by how they really are community oriented. It's not all me, me, me. I mean, they're thinking of themselves, but they're thinking of themselves in a way that does think about the whole, which is we talk about it in the West and try to be like that, but I don't know. We got a long way to go. Go to Japan and watch how it works. Okay, number seven is do use both hands to receive business cards and, like I said, gifts. And this, I always found this to be clumsy, personally, because I'm just so used to taking it by one hand. But no, you have to slowly take it with two hands, look at it, turn it over, and it's usually written in English on one side, Japanese on the other. And don't just get your purse and put it in your wallet or something. Hold it and respect it and tell them thank you, and then put it somewhere that you know, shows respect. Mm. Don't just jam it in something, because that's like they're giving you the entree to themselves. So it's important to do that. Same thing with the gift. It's heartfelt. And one little thing, it has to do with cards. It's not really a cultural thing. But whatever hotel that you're staying in Japan, one of the first things you want to get from either the front desk or the concierge is the business card of the hotel. So you will have the hotel's name, address, and phone number in kanji or in the foreign language if you're in another country, that in the event you get lost or you're just too tired to find the subway and you need to take a taxi, you have that information there, because in Japan, not a lot of people speak English. So that is super important. Okay. Then number 8, do take off your shoes in temples, shrines, some restaurants, at people's homes, and even in some bathrooms. I mean, some bathrooms are such that you have to take your shoes off and put your feet in bathroom slippers. They don't want your shoes in there. And this kind of, there's a practice or there's a belief, it's called Uchi Soto, and this is about taking off your shoes. And they believe it's kind of like an inside-outside relationship. Inside is comfort, cleanliness, and purity, and outside is soiled, unknown, and dangerous. And they feel like the shoes bring that in, so you have to take them off. And it's kind of a little bit like yin yang, not totally, but, you know, indoors, outdoors, family, others, Japan, the world. You know, they kind of have this kind of consciousness going on. But what you need to do is if you see shelving and shoes in it, that's your clear sign, or shoes in front of a place, clear sign. You just look for those cues when you take them off. And another side do is do wear socks every day. Even if you have, I hate to say this, heels. And I think the socks with heels trend came from Japan, because you could be walking around in wedges or heels for some reason, or any type of shoes. There you have, you want to do something and everybody takes their shoes off here. Or you have to go to the bathroom somewhere, and it's one of those bathrooms where you have to take your shoes off. Now, do you really want to not have socks on? So that is just a tip. That's not a cultural must. Even though they're extremely clean in Japan, like I said, that's just a little tip. Okay, number 9 is do practice temple and shrine ritual etiquette. Now, you know, when you visit any one of their religious sites, there really are some similar things that go on. But the first thing is you have to think that you're entering a private and obviously very sacred space. And before you enter it, they have what's called a purification ritual, where there are these fountains that usually have some kind of roof over them, and some running water, and there's a ladle, lots of times made out of bamboo, where you take, you put some water in the cup of the ladle, you wash one hand, you wash the other hand, then after that, you take some more water, and you put the put water in the cup of your hand, you put it in your mouth, you rinse out your mouth, and you spit it on the floor. Now, I know that sounds weird with the spitting on the floor, but here again, this is a purification ritual that they do, that the Japanese do before they enter into the shrines and the temples. So do it. If you want to go in, you should respect that practice and do it. Kind of just a little tidbit. You need to know the difference between a temple and a shrine to kind of know the etiquette nuances. And for a lot of foreigners, especially, they don't know the difference. And for a while, I didn't, because I thought, oh, this was a temple. And some of the temples have shrines in them, too. So it's kind of, but a shrine is a space that you enter through what's called a torii gate. And a torii gate is with, like, the two columns on the side and the crossbar on the top. Some of them are painted like a orangey red with black bottoms or not. Some of them are just basic, looks like they're stained wood or whatever. But you know you're entering a shrine when you go through that. Now, if there is a gate with doors on it, that is you're entering a temple, and typically, Buddhist temple. So that's the two things that you can hang your hat on, the difference between a shrine and a temple, okay? And shrines also tend to be open-air buildings. Temples tend to be more closed with doors and that kind of thing. Now, in both, you do what's bowing to the kami, or you bow to the spirits. And just like when you bow meeting someone, you bow when you are approaching the shrine or the temple as just a practice. Then when you approach a shrine, you're going to see a small offering box. And when you see this box, you are to throw a couple of coins in, because this is a practice that brings you or sets the tone for good fortune to lift your prayer. Or, you know, it's kind of like the beginning of the intention of this prayer. Then you bow twice. Next, you say the prayer to yourself. After that, you bow once again. And there's some of the, you have a bell in there that you ring, and I forgot exactly where you do that. I think you do it before to call the kami to you. That, and you see lots of people doing that. And I would go up there and do it, and I'm sure I didn't do it in the right order. I mean, I was trying to, but it's just, to me, it didn't totally sink in right. And I probably did it wrong the first time, so I'm all confused, but. And they also have things like prayer amulets that you can buy for special, you know, intentions and prayers. They have what's called fortune sticks that you go and they're in this tube and you shake them around and you pick your stick and you see what your fortune is. And it's just all part of how they visit and experience a shrine or a temple, and this is particularly a shrine. But when they pray, this is another thing. Usually all of their prayers, in some form or fashion, they will pray for good fortune, good health, and good luck for themselves and others. This is just, you know, basic. Their basic philosophy or in their prayer is good fortune, good luck, and good health, which I thought, that is so simple, but so, it just says it all. That's the key to a good life. And then, you know, of course, for whatever special favors, whether you're trying to pass an exam or, you know, anything that's really bothering you or you really want to do that's a stretch. Now, when you approach a temple, you know, you're going to see incense burners. It's a little bit different. And what you're to do there is you can say a prayer with, you buy or get an incense stick and you light it and you put it in the incense burner. And what you're supposed to do is take and make the smoke blow back on you. One thing that's a big no-no is do not light your incense stick from another incense stick, because they believe that you are taking on all the bad luck of that other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so don't do that. If you don't have a lighter, forget it. So, or get somebody to hand you something that you can light it yourself. Don't let anybody else light it. It's you lighting it.
Okay.
Okay? And then you approach the altar and you say your prayer, but you don't clap your hands. You know, you can clap your hands. I forgot the clapping of the hands. Did I? Oh, yeah. I said clap, bow twice, clap twice, and pray with the shrine. If they do this, they bow twice. They bow twice, and then they go. Then they pray. Then they bow again. At a temple, it's no clapping of the hands. But they also have candles in the temples that you can light for prayers and intentions that, you know, is different from in the shrines. So that's just some of the little differences and the nuances. If you want to know a lot more, get on the internet. And, you know, I can make a whole show about, you know, visiting a shrine versus visiting a temple and that kind of thing. But just know that there's some differences to do it when you visit it. Mm. Okay, and you have to take off your shoes, remember, all of them. Okay, number 10 is do put money when you're exchanging money on a tray rather than back into the hand. They don't like that at all. It's kind of a superstition, too, I think, that they just don't do it. And don't forget, this is just a tip. Bring enough cash because there are not that many ATMs there that will work with Western cards. And a lot of places still don't take credit cards. It's Japan still likes cash. Okay, number 11. Do shower before and after entering an onsen. Now, an onsen is like a public bath, and typically it can be either from natural spring water or it can be, you know, heated like a larger hot tub type of facility. But in Japan, they are super, super clean. And you cannot get in one of those unless you have showered and you basically, you know, you're clean before you enter it. And the same thing when you go out. So don't think you can get into one of those if they haven't. I mean, somebody will not let you go in. Okay. Then back to the trash, do dispose and handle your trash responsibly. So, you know, if you go to one of the vending machines and eat something out of there, you've sat down there and you've eaten it and you don't see a trash can, well, your rubbish you have to put in a little bag that you're going to carry or in your purse. And like Catherine, you were saying that I mentioned before, a lot of people carry around like a little plastic bag prepared for in the event they have some trash that they can put it in this bag and then put it in their tote or the backpack or their purse or whatever. And, you know, you can usually find trash cans at the convenience stores in the public toilets. If I remember correctly, I think I found them near the train station or in the train station, maybe in the toilet area. But there are very, very few trash cans. And like I said, Japan is hyper clean. And then number 13 is really the last one, is do dress conservatively. You know, you want to think smart casual there, simple, quality fabrics, cover the shoulder. They don't like any cleavage, but short shorts are okay, which I thought that was so odd. But for some reason, it doesn't matter. Active wear, they don't really like that. Only for hiking and sports activities. So your yoga pants and your, they don't, And like I said, shoes off when you're supposed to. There's another thing about dressing in Japan that's kind of, well, it's definitely unique to Westerners, especially people who are, I guess, older than 40. They kind of look at it like that is really weird. But they have this liking to what's called kawaii or cuteness and just being cutesy and wearing things that are like character-like and stuff. And you'll see people doing that. I mean, you know, they wear the kimono still in many, and that's not cute, but it's just part of their tradition. But this kawaii kind of cuteness is too. So don't be shocked if you see somebody with a pink pom-poms on their shoes or whatever. Just a little throw in a little cuteness. So express yourself if it's cute. But in general, just do dress conservatively, because that's really the tenor of what you're going to see in Japan. And Catherine, the final tip that I want to share is, and it goes back to a little bit what I was talking about being an American or somebody in another country. I mean, do remember you are a guest in this country as well as a traveler, okay? And respect wherever you are, their culture. In Japan, they're proud, they're mono-ethnic, and their traditional culture is still very strong, as well as, you know, their modern ways now. But respect all of that, because it's very much alive and well and important in Japan. Plus, you, like I said, you want to leave a good impression on the Japanese people that interact with you. You don't want to leave anybody with a bad taste of you. It's kind of like bad karma. You know what I'm saying? You want to leave, you know, good memories and in good interaction, good karma. So think like that, because I really do think your trip will be a lot more rewarding if you do, as well as if you practice these do's and don'ts that I've shared with you today. It will make a difference in the whole experience that you end up having when you go to Japan or anywhere else. Okay, well, Catherine, it's basically time to say sayonara to our listeners. But before we sign off, I'd like to ask everybody to give us that like or share if you've enjoyed or learned something that was valuable from the podcast or in this Japan travel series. We're really excited to do a seasonal format now for Solo Travel Talk, and Japan is our first, you know, focused topic. And I'm excited about it because Japan is becoming more and more a destination that people are actually traveling to, because it's more affordable tourism or it's more tourist friendly. And it's just so fabulous. So people are going there. Then also, if I've left an important cultural do or don't out, or you have a question about Japan or anything pertaining to solo travel, feel free to let us know what you're thinking in the comment section below, because we do read these comments, and these comments do help us with future programming. That's one of the reasons why we're going to give you how-to tips as much as we can, because people love how to, like how to do your itinerary, how to pack this, how not to get in trouble, how, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Wait, we did one on how to not to get in trouble. I need to read that. I need to get that one.
Well, no, we hadn't gone that far yet, but some of these don'ts are trying to help you not get in trouble. Okay, and then last, but definitely not least, subscribe to Solo Travel Talk, because when you subscribe, it does help push our broadcast out to more listeners all over the world so they can hear this information, and it, you know, builds our listenership, and we really, truly appreciate that, and, you know, it heartfelt thank you. So with that, I'll sign off by saying thanks for tuning in.
Dear listeners, we hope you got a lot of the cultural do's and don'ts. And like Astrid said, you can go to astridtravel.com/podcast and find all of her entire catalog of podcast episodes, including the Japan series. We thank you so much for listening. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. We love Spotify. Any fine place that you get your podcasts. Don't forget about the Astrid Travel Club. Just go to astridtravel.com and click the tab that says Travel Club. There is where you will find all the information about the Travel Club and really to see if it's right for you. Like we said, we're going to have a whole episode about the Travel Club, but this is really happening, and we're grateful for the sponsorship of this program. It's now I would like to say arigato and sayonara. We'll see you next time.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.